Hello, and welcome to the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. This podcast is dedicated to providing helpful insights from some of the industry's best and most respected leaders in the human capital space. I'm your host, Erica Ritchie, the Chief Client Officer at Audrey McGuckin Talent Solutions. And today I am thrilled that we are joined by our CEO, Audrey McGuckin, and Mark Rumbles, Principal Architect, Integrated People Solutions from Red Hat. Mark, we would love if you can share with our listeners a little bit about yourself, just who you are, what you do at Red Hat, and what you're passionate about.
Sure. Try to make that short so that we don't bore our audience. But I've been in this space for probably about 30 years and have done pretty much every role in the HR space, from employee relations to compensation, to labor relations, and was chief HR officer for a institute at the Duke University Medical Center here in Durham. Worked in healthcare for quite a long time, and then for the last 6 years, just to kind of advance this forward, I've been at this great company called Red Hat, and it's been a thrill, because I get to do now what I really love, which is leadership development work, along with some great partners here. I decided probably about 15 years ago that I thought the highest leverage point that I could work in with any individual and any organization was really in this space of leadership development, helping people create a good, solid self-awareness of who they are as leaders, and maybe more importantly, who they can be as leaders, and then developing experiences along with other leaders to kind of grow those capabilities. So my role right now is to architect and oversee our accelerated development programs for our high potential leaders at Red Hat.
That's great. You sound passionate about what you do, and you've got a lot of experience, a lot of HR areas, but it's amazing to find when people land where they're really passionate about. So thank you for sharing. Audrey, can you share with our listeners about how you met Mark and how you both came to know each other?
Sure. It was, I think, maybe 6 months ago, Mark, we had the opportunity to first meet, and immediately, I think in the first few minutes, we just hit it off. And, you know, I often reflect on our first conversation, Mark, and, you know, I think we met for about an hour, but during that 1 hour, in the first few minutes, there was just this deep sense of trust that we formed, very quickly. And you shared, you know, a lot of your perspective and passion, and I got the opportunity to share mine. And, you know, the common ground that we both had was our passion for leadership and this notion that it really matters. And what really matters most is how we grow and develop our leaders so that organizations can really realize their strategic ambitions. And so it wasn't just this notion of leadership, it was the notion of how leadership impacts the bottom line. And I think you and I, you know, we had this piece around where we're bottom liners. We're really about what matters most, what's the impact. And, you know, I was just filled with gratitude because of that conversation. You know, you just have some of those conversations in your own journey, and you look back and you think, well, what made it great? And what made it great is we were both vulnerable. We both trusted each other really quickly, and that meant that we got to share some of our passions. So, yeah, Erica, that's how we first met.
I love that.
There. So if I could just break in here, I'm probably breaking protocol on this, but you know, I'm in a lot of meetings, a lot of discussions during the week, as I'm sure everybody is. There's some meetings that I look forward to and some that I don't. Every discussion with Audrey is a pleasure, because it always leads to something, as she said, something substantial, something meaningful. I like what you said, Audrey, in terms of like what matters most. The more we can focus on that, the happier our lives are and the better our organizations are.
I know, I do. You know, this piece around what matters most and the moments of truth, I don't think could be any more relevant in the world we live in today. Look, there's no shortage of things to do. There's no shortage of content. There's no shortage, excuse me, of busyness and work to do. And so I think that our roles, Mark, is how do we help leaders navigate in a way that helps them get to what matters most, and where are those moments of truth? Because we can't do everything, right? So it's this idea of dialing in, creating focus, differentiation, and simplifying. And those are some of the big pillars that often we think about when we're designing leadership journeys and when we're designing work with clients. So, yeah, I appreciate that.
I love when people come together and they just celebrate and they honor one another, but they also learn from one another. There's a saying that I use all the time, and people who are around me a lot they get sick of this one, but I'm like, I just think we're better together. And when we come and we align and we're open with one another and we have dialogues like this and we challenge one another and agree with one another, that greatness comes out of it. And I just love that you guys have taken the time and really committed from, like Audrey, like you said, from that first conversation of, you know what, let's keep this conversation going. And I think it's really been amazing. So I'm excited to have brought you two together in this space so our listeners can really get an insight to what those conversations between the two of you look like. But let's go ahead and jump right into this for today. Mark, one of the things we're committed to is sharing insights with our listeners on organizations that are doing great work in the space of leadership development. And I read an interesting article on LinkedIn from your CEO, Jim Whitehurst. One of the things Jim talks about is open leadership. We'd love to hear your take on this for our listeners and also for the Red Hatters. What is open leadership? What is it? What isn't it? And why is it important?
Thank you, Erica. It's a great question. And let me just say this from the outset. We're still exploring what it means at Red Hat and as individual leaders. Open leadership is something that we started talking about a couple of years ago, and we have been on a bit of a journey to define exactly what it is and how it comes to life. But the simplest way I can describe it is that we really define it as a blend of mindsets, behaviors, and practices that enable people to thrive and contribute in an organization, and specifically in an open organization. And we really believe that open leadership can be practiced anywhere, education, in our communities, social groups, schools, homes. But the way that we talk about it is primarily in an organizational context here at Red Hat.
Mark, I love the way you kind of broke that down, because, you know, often people will say, well, what does that really mean when we start talking about a topic? So what does it really mean, open leadership? And this the way you described it around, it's about mindsets, it's about behaviors, and it's about practices. But one of the things that's intriguing for me is, why do you think your CEO cares about it? I mean, I was on his LinkedIn the other day and just looking at some of his articles and his writing and his perspective, and he seems just deeply passionate about it. And I thought, you know, I must ask Mark why and where that came from, and just be great to know what was the genesis for that.
Thanks, Audrey. Our CEO, first of all, is an amazing individual. I don't know if he'll ever hear this podcast, but he already knows he's pretty special. He's one of the most popular CEOs probably in the world if you look at, you know, any kind of measure. And I think what makes what he's talking about so genuine is that he came from Delta. And Delta, I've flown on Delta. Delta's a fine airline, but probably most people wouldn't describe it as an open organization necessarily. It's a very traditionally run airline. When Jim came to Red Hat, he recognized that he was moving into something different. And he was one of those humble leaders who was able to say, look, I don't understand what's going on here right now. This place is not run like I've ever seen any other organization run, but I need to sit back, listen, and learn. To me, that might be the biggest thing that a leader can do, an open leader, is to maybe talk less and listen more. So I would say over the past, he's been here probably about 12 years now, he has continued to evolve and learn as a leader, even though he came here as a very accomplished leader. He's built an incredible organization that's just continued to grow at kind of lightning speed. So let me just pause there. I think that that's maybe the biggest thing, is his ability to just commit himself to a journey of personal learning. I think it's a great example for all of us.
And I think that really helps give us something to hang on to as an example of what is open leadership. So it's a mindset of curiosity. You know, it sounded like when he came from Delta to Red Hat, he allowed himself to be curious. Not that we want to speak for your CEO, but it sounds like he did really put on that, take on that mantra of let's be curious. And let's listen. And he clearly saw, you know, lots of advantages and outcomes and impact to this notion of open leadership. And Mark, sometimes I can't even in my own mind differentiate between leadership and culture, because I think they cross over and they become synonymous, and they can be a little bit blurry. But one thing we know for sure is the CEO is the CEO of the culture, and the CEO is the CEO of leadership. So no matter what, that's always true in an organization. And, you know, we have a famous saying of the fish rots from the head. So when there's problems with culture, you can typically source it back to the top of the house. And culture can really, it really is shaped every day by the CEO. And so I think that that's an interesting parallel or area that's connected to leadership. I'd love your thoughts on that, Mark.
Yeah, it's so spot on. This is why I love talking with you. A couple of years ago, probably coincides with this time we began to really talk about open leadership. But, you know, I was tasked with developing a leadership strategy for Red Hat. We have had a lot of leadership programs. We also have management development programs and programs for individual contributors. Though we didn't really have a strategy to execute from. And so I went down the path of beginning to work with people to develop a leadership strategy. What we quickly realized is we needed a culture and leadership strategy, because the two things are so intertwined, exactly what you said. And I know we've never had this conversation before, so that's why I know you're brilliant. And in fact, we at one point we went as far as we called it leadership plus culture strategy is literally how we had titled it. And then we got talking about it. We said, no, we need to put culture first. So culture plus leadership. And it was just even that kind of fine tuning had a lot to say about what the importance we place on culture. So I know that Jim, as our CEO, and I believe everyone at Red Hat believes that culture is our strategic competitive advantage. So it's everything, because it mirrors the way that we develop software with open source communities. We found that to be such a beneficial way of creating solutions for our clients that, you know, it permeates our culture. It's the way we do business. It's the way that we have our conversations with our associates, how we design our programs. It's all about having a culture that people feel like they're included and they can be contributors. And you're absolutely right. It kind of, I'm not sure it even starts at the top, but without the support of Jim, this would be impossible. In fact, he calls himself sometimes his role is really catalyst in chief. That's his role. And when he says that, he's talking about culture.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, we could debate where does culture start? Where does it end? Where's the middle piece? And, you know, there's a lot of, bottom up things that happen and that make a culture. And there's a lot of top down things, but I kind of draw us back to the moments of truth. And so it's in those moments of truth for Red Hat, what actually happens? You know, when there's a debate or a dilemma or a decision to be made that the answer's not black and white, and either the CEO or a leader will say, we're going to spend the money on leadership development even over this quarter's push for reducing costs. So it's in those moments of truth where there's a tough call to make, and what's the call that's made can often set the tone for the culture.
You got to get out of my head, because it's crowded in here with both of us in here, because this is something that's occupied a lot of my attention just sort of in those moments where I have time to really think. I do believe that leadership, and this again relates back to culture again, but that leadership is it happens in moments. It is those moments of truth. We've tried really hard at Red Hat not to sort of tap people on the head and say you're a leader, because you're in an executive role or you're the CEO or you're the principal architect. Leaders are made in moments, and we can be good leaders in moments and poor leaders in moments, and non-leaders, I guess, in moments as well. So we try very hard not to describe leadership as a position. In fact, we go out of our way to say that really it is about mindsets, behaviors, and practices, and those are so much in the moment. And you're right, it's kind of that collection of those moments over time that our associates experience that really defines the culture. I could say tons more about that, but I'll stop there.
Yeah, and I love that, Mark, and just this idea of leadership's not about level, and this connection to culture and the moments of truth. You know, I worked for an organization that was pretty focused on innovation, but innovation with the client. And so the way they were organized is that they had work cells inside of the organization that would work with work cells in the client organization. And so because they had that a pillar of their culture as innovation, a moment of truth for them was when it was engineer to engineer. So when both of those engineers were working together, what actually happened? And that was a moment of truth. And, you know, that organization was very, very intentional about what needed to happen in that moment of truth when those two engineers came together. You know, we as a firm, as we think about the culture inside of our own organization and our firm, I obsess about the client and the client experience. And so a moment of truth for us inside of our organization is we have very regular client meetings, and we have committed to not crowding that space with any other thought than what's right for the client. And so, you know, there may be an interruption, or we may have a different thought about operations or something different, and we call each other out and say, we're having a conversation about a client, and we committed to making this conversation high quality, and that's a moment of truth for us. And so it's just to bring a practical lens onto what's a moment of truth for some of our listeners.
Well, I think this has been a great conversation, and I want to kind of move us along and along this thought process that you started, Audrey. And Mark, one of the things we often get asked is, how do you go about translating a CEO vision into a reality? And I think this is kind of where we're heading. You know, Audrey, you just talked about this idea where we've said we've decided as a firm that we care about the client experience. Well, here's a practical aspect of how we're going to do that. So let's keep going that way. And Mark, we'd love to hear your take on this. Is how have you gone about translating Jim's vision into a reality, specifically in the space of leadership?
Well, I'm going to flip the table on this a little bit, because if we're talking about my experience here at Red Hat and, you know, Jim Whitehurst, our CEO, I would say that Jim became part of the culture and is definitely driving it, but it was here before he got here. And what he's done is enhance it. So he's helped to help us to recognize the strength of our culture and the power of our culture, and then removed barriers so that that culture can grow. I think that that's one thing leaders do. We have a lot of, I call them boundaries within organization. And boundary might be, we have geographies and we have functions and we have budgets and we have job titles and we have processes and policies. Those are all boundaries that exist so that it's not chaotic madness within an organization. Sometimes those boundaries become barriers to collaboration, to exchange of information, to, you know, making speedy and correct decisions. And I think Jim, because of his style, is a, what I would say, is a context leader. He believes that what we do is provide the context for people to design their own approach to the work. The context being, why are we here as a company? Just like you said, with your firm there, it's client first. For us, it's definitely client first, and also our communities. So I think Jim, again, says that a leader sets the context, gives people the why, gives some general parameters about direction, and then we hire good, passionate people who want to bring that to life. So you don't see a lot of procedures or policies or dictates or mandates within an open organization like ours. You see a lot of information sharing, data sharing, and a lot of extension of trust.
I think that's a key word, right? It's this you called it extension of trust, and that's the correlation with openness is just palpable, right? It's because you won't be open with information if you don't trust people. You won't be open with asking for help if there isn't trust, and you won't be open to ideating and exploring because there's no policies, or there's very little policies and procedures and dictating, and that's so connected to trust. You know, Mark, you are the principal architect of these big leadership solutions at Red Hat, and often we hear about best practices and good practices, and you know, I'm the program director for the conference board, and I moderate and facilitate a succession management conference for them each winter. And one of the first things I say at the beginning of those conferences is, you're going to hear a lot of great practices, but you're going to hear where people screwed up as well. Because sometimes when you hear where people screwed up or took a misstep or just made an error, there's huge learning can happen. And so I'm not going to ask you to bare your soul, but I wondered if, you know, just on your own personal journey the last 6 years at Red Hat, you know, is there a couple of things that you could share with our listeners on, gosh, this was one big thing I learned, either early on in my transition or that just that you learned that could be insightful for our listeners?
I think I've learned a lot of things that I need to unlearn. That the more experience that you collect, and maybe more knowledge that you gain can sometimes be a barrier, because you think you've defined a lot of things. You think you've had an experience that will carry you through in each circumstance. And so I think I've had to, drop a lot of that and I would use the term let go of some of what I thought was truth or made sense to me in another environment that maybe just I don't know if I want to say less true in this one, but maybe not helpful. So I've begun to think about this. Again, you're taking me back into my head, but I'm beginning to think about this as, you know, we can develop new neural pathways in our brain. We're learning a lot about brain science and how that plays out in leadership and how it plays out just in our daily lives. I think what I'm trying to do is build the new neural pathways. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but you can, it's almost this idea of find strengths and then build on those strengths. But it does involve letting go of certain assumptions and certain ideas that may have worked in a different time in a different environment. So I always want to be the youngest old guy in the room. And that means that I'm always learning. And while I may have collected more time on the planet than other people that I'm in a meeting with, I want to be the first to learn. So that's kind of a long-winded, long-winded thing. So I think what that really means is I've made a lot of mistakes based on what I thought I knew. And so part of being open is continuing to learn and suspend judgment and maybe realize when knowledge, my own knowledge, can actually be a barrier because it allows me to only see through a certain filter.
Mm, I love that. I'm just I'm kind of in my mind. I always try and create these mental models. And so, you know, I'm going to play back for you what I think I heard you say is to to be somebody that first thinks about learning, second thinks about suspending judgment, third is curious to think through what is possible. And then I really like the fourth one, which is be intentional about creating those new neural pathways. And I think, you know, you couldn't have said it any more succinctly. And just that this idea of we all have muscle memory, and we all have ways of doing things, and just to have a mindset of what could be possible and what's the new way of doing things.
Yeah, thanks for summarizing that. I kind of want to put that on a slide now, and I have to listen to this afterwards, because that was very nice. In fact, said it a whole lot better than the words that came out of me. So thank you. Thank you for that. And I do wholly believe that. I am reading a new book now that just was published. It's Marcus Buckingham. And every time I mention an author, a book, or whatever, obviously all of us, especially in the leadership world, there are many, many models, many, many thought leaders, many, many approaches, lots of research, lots of writing. This particular book is kind of fascinating to me because it's titled The Nine Lies About Work, or something like that. So it's right down this path of recognizing that we do a lot of things as individuals and a lot of things as leaders within an organization. We have a lot of things that we have just assumed are the right and proper way to do things, but they don't necessarily work, or they may have worked, but they don't work anymore. And so I love provocative things like that, because it just continues to help me question what we're doing and to always try to measure the effectiveness of what we're doing, and to know at the end of the day who's the judge of how we're doing. You know, in any kind of business, at the end of the day, I think that's the customer. And we would also say at Red Hat, it's our associates, because you can't really separate those two.
That's right. And I think that, you know, kind of brings us nicely to a couple of things that we hold as principles in the firm. You talked a couple of minutes ago, Mark, about, no, wow, that was great. I said some things there that I may not have articulated before. And we're a huge fan of data times a conversation equals an insight. And so if we can bring data to the table, if we can create an environment like this where there's, you know, at least some guided conversation, it always, without fail, leads to an insight or an aha moment. And, you know, I've had a couple of those on this conversation. And then just to kind of round us up, back to leadership in support of what? And you talked about your associates at Red Hat. And we believe that as well, right? Because we can have all of these assessments, we can have all of this science, we can have people doing leadership development work, but for what? And it kind of takes us back to for who first. And that's this notion about being human-centered. And so to really move the needle in leadership, it's about data, and it's about associates, and it's about clients, which makes it human-centered. Mark, what a great conversation.
Well, I've loved it. I want part two, part three, part four, part five. So, I'm all in. I hope this is not the end, but as Churchill said, the end of the beginning.
I love that. Well, this has been a fantastic perspective from you, Mark, and from you as well, Audrey. And I know there's been some aha moments for me, especially Mark, as you were talking about neuro pathways and some things that have gotten stuck, and some of Audrey, you called it muscle memory. And, one thing that Audrey, you've challenged me on is, not getting stuck in what we do, but why we do it and for whom we do it for. And yeah. I think when the neuro pathways or the muscle memory gets stuck in the what and not the why and the who, that's where some of those barriers can come in. So, that was a really just nice aha moment for me of even going back to, as we talk about the client experience and what we build for our clients, I love process and I'm for process and it does bring something measurable, but never getting stuck in what we do, but always going back to for whom we're doing it for and how we can stay really human centered. And that's part of what's drawn me into this work and being with you, Audrey. So I always love when we get back there and challenge ourselves to keep talking about who are we solving for? Mark, as you do that for your Red Hat leaders and we do it for our clients, we stay human centered. So thank you guys so much. It really was a great conversation, and I'm sure our listeners have really enjoyed it. And I want to thank our listeners as well. Thank you for being here with us today and for listening to this episode of the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. We look forward to you joining us for an episode next month. And until next time, I'm Erica, and thank you for listening. And to learn more about what we do, feel free to join us on our website or to connect with us on LinkedIn.